municipality to make sure there is or is not a snow emergency where you live, so you do not get a ticket for parking somewhere you shouldn't be parking. Right now, wind from the west northwest at 9 miles per hour. It is 30 degrees. 8:10, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. Part one is Gateway Technical College President Brian Albrecht. Part two from the archives is a conversation about servants and what it feels like to have servants in one's home and what it feels like to be a servant to someone else. Stay with us. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, happy to be sitting across the table from Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, who, of course, pays his monthly visit to the morning show today. And this, of course, the first of what I would assume to be at least 12 visits to the morning show in this coming year. Welcome back.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, it's actually our first show in the new year, so I'm really excited to be here. And I know that there are so many great stories to share with our community, so I commit to being back every month again this year.
Very good. And we'll be telling the interesting story of apprenticeships today, and we'll introduce our special guest in just a moment. January means that we just had December graduations, and probably listeners would be surprised at how many people graduate from Gateway in December.
You know, when I first came to Gateway, I was actually very surprised, too, on the number of students that are served. But Gateway's the fifth largest college in Wisconsin now, topping over 20,000 students annually. And this last December, over 700 of those students completed either a certificate or a one-year diploma program or their two-year associate degree. And that's what I think makes Gateway unique. It's not just the two-year degree that is thought of as a completer here. We have one-year diploma programs, certificate programs, short-term training programs, a lot of ways that individuals can earn their skills and get their credential and either continue to work or jump right into the workforce.
There you go. I know that this was an exciting week for you because you were on hand for an exciting announcement that involves workforce training funding here in the state of Wisconsin, something announced by Governor Walker.
Right. We're really excited to be a part of this announcement. Governor Walker, through the Foxconn Incentive Program, had committed $20 million for worker training, and much of that effort is going to be focused on assuring that there are equal points of access for all individuals, including veterans, our work with the correctional facilities, youth, as we develop 1+3 programs to support students engaging in our community in deeper ways. In Racine, as an example, they have a program called Uplift 900 to try to bring 900 folks from the inner city into the workforce, and our GED initiatives. There's so many different ways that we think we can partner with this effort, and our team is working diligently already to assess the language that was introduced and find out where we can fit to apply for some of those funds to help support our community.
Hmm. I know that you're excited about the partnerships that Gateway has had with area high schools, and those partnerships are only getting, in a sense, more deeper and richer.
Well, they continue to grow. We actually had a study that was done a little over 6 months ago that kind of compared Gateway to the other technical colleges, and over 76% of the students that take a class while they're in high school, a Gateway Technical class, will transition directly into Gateway Technical College. So that's really remarkable, 3 out of 4. And this year alone, we have 3,500 students taking college courses while they're in high school. So building pathways of opportunity from the high school into Gateway, and then from Gateway onto a university is really important for us, and it's a big part of our strategy. Over the last 4 or 5 months, we've spent a lot of time working on a project called Industry 4.0, which is the integration of the IT world with the manufacturing world, really the baseline for automated systems and advanced manufacturing, things you'd find at Amazon or Uline or Foxconn coming to our community or Haribo and any one of these advanced manufacturing companies. And it's intended to have four courses that are available for high school students. If they take those four courses, 12 college credits will transfer to Gateway, and it fits right into our advanced manufacturing two-year associate degree program. So it is a way for an on-ramp for students to get started in these careers, to expose high school students to some of the new technologies, and to partner with our schools to make sure that we're leveraging the resources of our community. Great teaching at the high school, great teaching at the college, shared equipment, and really help ramp up, if you will, the speed to work here in our community.
Fantastic. I know you want to finish out our opening here by talking about some new programs here at Gateway, just when we think there aren't any more areas to grow. But, of course, there's always someplace Gateway needs to grow.
Always. And, you know, not just Industry 4.0. Those are all courses and new programs that we're offering here. But we opened a new culinary program over on the Elkhorn campus. It's terrific. So students now on the western edge of the district don't have to drive all the way down to Racine to take culinary. They could take it right on the Elkhorn campus. We're getting ready to announce the opening of a brand new barber cosmetology program in Burlington. We've had great success in Racine and Kenosha, and this will help us move a little bit more toward the western side of the district as well. And then most recently, we worked on our new high-performance engine program, something I'm really excited about, in partnership with BRP and Yamaha and many of the other area dealers. And how this came about a year ago, I read an article in the paper that suggested that there was a shortage of technicians in the outboard motor arena. So there was an article that just said that the only training program available was up in Superior, Wisconsin at Indian Head Technical College. So we gathered a group of our partners, and Amanda Farley from BRP was our greatest advocate and said we need to start one in southeast Wisconsin. So we worked hard to put that together, and now we're going to be working on boat motors, jet skis, four-wheelers, all the things that are just high energy, high impact, and high performance engines. That'll be on our Racine campus.
Right, and it seems like that's something of just growing interest anyway. So
I know I'm interested, and I know a lot of young people are.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, you have in your garage or your shed, and you're like, got to get those out this time of year, snowmobiles, and soon it'll be jet skis.
Oh, boy. Well, time now for us to introduce to our listeners the special guest that you have brought with you today, Kate Walker, Director of Operation Gateway Business and Workforce Solutions. That's a title with some pizzazz.
We are so fortunate to have Kate on our team, and she'll share a little bit of her background with you, but it's very extensive and comprehensive, so it's a perfect fit as she helps us design new programming options for adults and for our employers to make sure that the fit is well with Gateway. But also today we want to talk about apprenticeship, which is not new. It's over 100 years old, and it's been an important part of our community and is even more important today, including some additional funding in that $20 million that I mentioned earlier to help continue to advocate for apprenticeship and build out new apprenticeship models for not only Southeast Wisconsin but for the entire state.
Fantastic. Kate Walker, it's a pleasure to welcome you back to the morning show. I think it's been a little while since you've been with us.
It's been a little while. I think I was on a while ago to talk about Launchbox.
Right. But now we talk about what I think the president has correctly characterized as a very old concept of apprenticeships, but apprenticeships as they thrive in the year 2018. So explain to our listeners what the focus of the Business and Workforce Solutions team is. What kind of things do you concern yourself with?
Sure. We provide customized training for business and industry, and that's somewhat unique to our area. But one thing we can do is we can offer any program within the college. So if a company wanted to have biology training, we could coordinate that for them with our biology instructors and provide that for them. So it's kind of unique that we can do that. We do a lot in manufacturing, but we have great capacity to access any area in the college.
Wow.
I think it's exciting. I mean, just the idea of the biology as an example. We're here today. The radio station's in the Inspire Center.
Right.
Anatomy, physiology. I know we've done some training specifically for Bradshaw Medical in anatomy. Mm-hmm. Their technicians on the floor making surgical instrumentations have a better knowledge base if they understand the anatomy of the human body.
What they're building this
right,
for.
Right, right.
Yep. And even like call centers getting the type of training that they will receive questions on from what's being manufactured in the facility. We can provide that. So it's somewhat unique. We've done some blueprint training for call centers so that they understand the parts and the questions that come in and really the fundamentals. So anything's possible with our area. We do a lot of things that are probably non-traditional and somewhat outside the box, and that's what we love to do.
Wow.
You know, I think one of the unique things about the Business and Workforce Solutions team is that while you have to have a place to kind of call home, you know, to put your backpack at the beginning of the day, but
right.
for the most part, the whole team is very virtual. It's in the community yep. at different locations. We deploy employees to work sites, and it's a very unique delivery model.
Right. Mm. And I do have some instructors that I don't see but maybe monthly because they're out in the companies really living there and, you know, working with them extensively. So it would be unique for me to see some of them on a day-to-day basis.
Wow, because they're just busy in the trenches going where the need is,
mm-hmm.
right? Speaking of need, of course, we have all kinds of new companies coming into the area, and we mm-hmm. hear so much about worker shortages that and that is an acute need, and I'm sure that you and your team play some role in helping companies with that.
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I said we weren't having this conversation with our companies daily right now. They're very concerned, but we're trying to help them stay on top of it with, you know, accessing our K-12 pipeline, getting more involved with the high schools that are actively working to address this issue, as well as apprenticeship. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit more, but I think the employers are looking at that as a solution to retain talent and grow from within, and we really want to make sure that they have access to it and understand how it works for them.
So what would be the most important programs that would make a difference for a company in the area that's facing that kind of problem?
I think not just one program can really help their need. Really getting involved with several, being at the table with the development of all of our high school partnerships and programs that we're working on. I think that's key for Pipeline, and they recognize that, as well as taking advantage of the training we can provide and assist them with in various areas, whether it's through our academic programs or through our workforce solutions, and just really coming to us and knowing that we're a resource for them in many ways that they don't always know that we're there for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think sometimes it's just rethinking sort of the work model of today. I mean, we talk a lot about different work styles for millennials and other age demographics of workers, but it's really, you know, we've got a worker shortage, and mostly we might just have a people shortage, right? We don't have as many people as we had before, so it's upskilling the current workforce, making sure that they continue to learn, lifelong learning, and gain skills. New equipment comes in, learning new technologies like all of us, new software programs, right. And we got to adapt and adjust to that, but also creating greater paths of awareness for mm-hmm. parents and children about what are some of these unique opportunities in our community. And then I think what's really important, too, is just the diversified array of jobs that are available. Most people think of a manufacturing company as, oh, we're just going to work in the factory side of it. Oh, not true. There's an engineering side. There's a business side. There's a marketing side. There's an accounting side. There's all different aspects of work that can mm-hmm. be done. And all of those fit under the umbrella of manufacturing. So it's an important role that Kate and her team play, and it's one that we take very seriously because I like to say it's the second half of the same coin. We offer a lot of great associate degrees, a lot of traditional academic programs. People come to our campus, they're in a classroom, but the other side of that coin is just as many people are at work taking workshops, taking seminars, learning on the job, whether it's apprenticeship or work-based learning or any other model. That's an equally important part of our mission.
Let's talk a few specifics here, and I know that, for instance, a lot of our listeners know about the boot camp program
right.
that has attracted a lot of headlines, and justifiably mm-hmm. so. And of course, there are other training programs that are here at Gateway. Might be interesting to hear about some specifics here, and also the ways in which this kind of coursework would be different from mm-hmm. a more traditional course that one might take in college.
Sure, and the unique portion of what we can bring to the table is, yes, you take a structured course, you know, for a program, and that has set curriculum, and it, you know, their objectives are clearly met to that. But when we work with a company, we can look at what their operation is and customize what that training will be for their needs. So a perfect example, we work with a company in Kenosha quite extensively on their basic assembly training. And that's part of their orientation process for their employees, that we come in and provide that training, and it's specific to their operation, and it really encompasses their whole plant and all of their needs, and it's specific to that one particular company.
So you mean, for instance, somebody who's on the assembly line,
mm-hmm.
that it is Gateway who trains them on exactly what they need to do and how they need to do it, and
right.
so on.
And
it's not uncommon that you could go into an employer in our area and actually see a Gateway classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So the programs, whether it's a math program or whether it's a manufacturing skill set, those opportunities are brought right into the manufacturing setting. Sometimes it's in the cafeteria break room of the workforce. Sometimes they have a separate training room or an HR area that they provide opportunities like this. So bringing the experience right to the floor is important.
And it's not uncommon to see us providing training at a third shift or on a Saturday either. And that, I think that's one thing that is unique to us, that we can be that flexible and meet our employers where they're at.
It's huge.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think that is sometimes missed in all of this too, Kate and her team work closely with our local economic development organizations like Kenosha Area Business Alliance, CABA. Supervisory management programs that are offered through there are delivered in partnership with Gateway. So to take advantage of the collaboration between organizations like Gateway or RCDC or CABA, those really help to fill that need for worker training and the types of skill sets that employers are looking for through different organizations.
Mm. For those of you just joining us today on the morning show, it's the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. And with us today is also Kate Walker, director of Operation Gateway Business and Workforce Solutions. So she is one of the people who is most instrumental in fostering some of these connections that Gateway has with companies in the community in terms of helping them gain the training programs that they need for their own workers, which brings us to the wonderful and age-old topic of apprenticeships, which get talked about actually more and more. So let's start with kind of a general overview. In what ways do apprenticeships figure in what Gateway does, and specifically in what your team does?
Sure. I like to say that actually Gateway's history and apprenticeship are one and the same, because we started as the entity to provide the paid related instruction for apprenticeship. So it's a great history we have, and we're very proud of, because we were both the first vocational college in the country as well as the first provider of apprenticeship. So it's an age-old model with apprenticeship. It's essentially learning from a master craftsman a trade and skill, and it involves mentorship and instruction. So those are the key components of apprenticeship. And I think for a long time that the trades in general were just thought of as something that might not be as attractive, and people didn't quite understand the importance of apprenticeship and how that knowledge transfer happens through those programs. So unfortunately, we come, you know, across the skills gap that's happening right now, and it's really created a lot of opportunity for employers to really revisit apprenticeship as a model for them to develop and retain employees that they could be losing, and a way for them to take that knowledge transfer from their skilled journey workers and transfer it to their up-and-coming stars that they need to develop to be competitive right now. So it really makes sense when you step back from it for a bit. I think it's exciting. We have a great team that's very skilled in what they do. But I can tell you, each person that teaches apprenticeship does it for the sole reason of giving back to the trade. And that's probably very unique. That's something you will see in all apprenticeships. I mean, every week I'm talking to potential instructors, and you know, I ask them why they want to do it, and every one of them will tell me they want to give back to the trade that's been so good to them and their families. So I think that's really a story to share, and it makes me very excited about all the opportunity that we have with apprenticeship. I know we're going to have a lot of growth with the construction trades in particular. I'm hearing right now we're probably going to add 40 new apprentices just for fall, so trying to plan for that, it's exciting. There's going to be a lot of opportunity. But it's really something that makes sense with, you know, with our history and what we know and what we do, and really can support the region and our communities.
I just love that. A little history lesson. You know, 1911, the continuation school was founded in Racine. Today it's called Gateway Technical College. 1911, Wisconsin's apprenticeship program started Gateway. At that time could provide the related instruction. And this idea of the mentoring component to it, which is really the giving back and, you know, that skilled trade craftsperson feel, right? And how do you deliver that into the inspiration of someone's profession going forward? And so apprenticeship has been a part of our history, as Kate said, and really now as we look toward the future, it's so important, because the technology skills are something that you can't just learn independently. You've got to have a collaborative effort to make that happen. So a broader sense, mentoring is even more important
today. Right.
So exactly what does this modern day apprenticeship look like? I mean, so for instance, who are these apprentices, and what does Gateway have to do with them?
Sure. So apprentices come to us typically through a contract that is the originator would be the employer and the Department of Workforce Development and the apprentice. and they make an agreement that for a term, the apprentice will engage in paid related instruction. Some of them require non-paid related instruction, what we commonly refer to as night school, for a limit or for a set term. And then upon that, they will continue work with their mentors, and then they will complete their apprenticeship and receive journey worker status, which is a portable credential that's recognized nationwide, and it has a lot of value to it. So that's typically how they're structured. Depending on the trade, they can vary from a year and a half to 5 years. It's pretty the common term that we see for our apprenticeship programs.
And there's things that maybe people can relate to. For example, we all know that to become a doctor, you go to school for so many years, like eight, and then you serve in a residency, right?
Yep.
So then you work for a year or two underneath the supervision of another doctor. As a teacher, I went to school for 4 years, and then I did my student teaching. I worked as a part-time teacher under the supervision of another teacher. In an apprenticeship, a person would come to school maybe one day a week and then be working the other 4 days a week under the direct supervision of a mentor. And so that contract language spells out how that experience is going to be structured and what types of skills are going to be delivered in that. So, Greg, you could be the mentor for me if I ever wanted to go into the radio business. and I could spend more time here, and you could teach me that craft.
Gotcha. And so, but you'd also be spending part of the week in a more standard classroom at Gateway.
Because there are core skills that we want to assure that every apprentice and every student has. You know, basic competencies in math, communications, and maybe specific to that occupation. Safety standards in plumbing may be a little different than safety standards in electrical trades. And so just that familiarity with the content knowledge of that industry, but then the day-to-day applications. How does one employer deliver that service versus another employer? And as an employer, you have the opportunity to actually witness the demonstrated skill. So you can help shape the skill set of your employee and move them along much quicker in the types of services that your company provides.
Right. And so you're not just learning it off a blackboard.
Correct.
Right. And one of the most attractive pieces for the apprentice is they actually get paid while they learn and go through this orientation process, which is very unique. There aren't many opportunities for this to happen. And pay progressions can be built into that apprenticeship time. So they could start out making 40% of what a journey worker would make. But as they continue in their journey, as they work forward, that goes up the longer they're in it. So it's a very attractive way for somebody to earn an income while they're learning a trade and a skill.
Interesting. Explain what youth apprenticeship is. Is it the same thing but just with younger people, or is youth apprenticeship sort of a different kind of program?
Yeah. Youth apprenticeship is a little bit different. It typically is offered to junior and seniors in high school, and they do have the ability to get mentored and receive instruction. This model is similar, just a little bit different. I can say that they receive job mentors who assist with the training, and they gain work experience as they're in the program. There are two different levels for it. Level one is 1 year, and it's based on 450 hours. And then level two is 2 years and based on 900 hours. And there are a lot of trades and professions that are available to the youth as they explore these opportunities. And the real nice thing and unique component is if they're interested in going on to a registered apprenticeship, oftentimes these hours can transfer into that. So you could be a high school student as a junior in a youth apprenticeship program and decide you want to go into manufacturing. You would get credit for that for your registered apprenticeship as an adult. So it's a nice pathway for these students and opportunity. Employers are excited about it. I know of one employer that loves to give their youth apprentices an opportunity to stay on with them and is very proactive in doing so. So,
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity, and we're trying to just make sure that parents know that's an option, because as you know, costs go up for education, this is one that relatively is a no-brainer for them if they're already accustomed to the apprenticeship program for the youth.
Yeah, I think it helps to make school real for a lot of young people as well, because they're in school, they're at work. That part-time job can already make sense to them, because now there's an application to what they're doing at the job site. I think our largest youth apprenticeship partnership right now is in Racine, in the automotive area.
Yep.
So Racine Park High School, Racine has academies, and Park High School is the academy for automotive. And Gateway programming is offered there. Those students then go out and work in dealerships, and they can earn hours and income while they're working, but also college credit while they're at Park High School. Up to 26 college credits can be earned. So they can graduate from high school and actually have their first year diploma pretty well completed toward their college degree. So it's a pretty remarkable model.
Fantastic. Some of what you've described, Kate, you've made it. You've given some indication that, what happens here is relatively unique or certainly uncommon. How uniform is the practice of apprenticeship across the country? And are we talking about doing it a little differently, for instance, here at Gateway?
I'd say there are some similarities and some differences, of course. As far as the structure goes, most of them do have paid-related instruction, and it's probably, you know, one day to 2 days a week. Some of them actually load the instruction on the front end before you'd actually go out into the trade. That is one model I'm familiar with. But a lot of them are unpaid apprenticeships. So that is one thing that is unique to our state, and I'm very proud that we can offer that for our apprentices that participate. But I think the fundamental philosophy of the contract and how it comes together is the same, and the form of mentorship is essential, and it's something that all of the apprenticeships in the country follow.
There's also a collaboration between the unionized apprenticeship programs and the non-unionized apprenticeship programs, and we offer both at Gateway, and they're both important and valuable experiences. It's just the way they're structured under their joint apprenticeship councils, which help to provide governance models for colleges like Gateway that deliver the related instruction. And maybe, Kate, you could just mention a little bit about how the state is structured. We're one of many delivery services for apprenticeship. We may be one of the oldest, but there is a state apprenticeship bureau as well, and we host a lot of their activities at Gateway.
We host their activities, and we are fortunate we actually have one of their training representatives on site in our district. So if an employer is looking to get connected with apprenticeship, we can make that happen relatively quickly and with ease because we do have that strong foundation and relationship with them.
Fantastic. I am sure that, you and your team have a very close relationship with the organizations that are really trying to boost the whole entrepreneurial spirit of the of the region, with something like Kenosha's new creative space. Say a word about that for our listeners who might not be acquainted with it, and then what you and your team can do in terms of some of the new entrepreneurial ventures here in the area.
Well, I'm very excited to see that they got their space and they're ready to get going. It's something that I've been heavily involved with as my experience on the Art Commission and learning a lot more about the activities that are going in the creative space in Kenosha. They're doing pop-up activities, and on any given day there's a great event that they're working on. I'm really happy to see this going forward, and I know that through our LaunchPox program and Growth Wheel, we can support them through providing, you know, resources and counseling to their entrepreneurs as they get going, as well as our Fab Lab. I'm hoping that we can connect our Fab Lab and mobile truck to the Creative Center and hope that we can establish maybe some formal hours that we could be there on site to provide some resources for them around 3D printing and accessing those technologies. So I think there'll be a lot more to come. I think through our DECA chapter, we can connect with them and provide some resources, our Biz Squad. I think the opportunities are just endless with what they're doing and what we already have in place at Gateway.
I really like the idea of trying to integrate traditional delivery models like apprenticeship with the more innovative entrepreneurial experiences that we know are important for our community. Because if you think about the idea of mentoring, whether it's an art space or a music space or a design space or a traditional electrical trade, each of those need that creative interaction. And I think through the idea of apprenticeship, building into this idea of entrepreneurship, we can create even greater foundations. And we know that in our district, we've been expanding programs in entrepreneurship as well as apprenticeship in things like wastewater treatment management and healthcare and non-traditional career paths. And I think the creative space will help to open our eyes even a little bit wider to what we can be doing.
That is exciting. Kate, the things that you have been talking about today, the various models and forms in which this business training takes place. Are we talking about the entire Gateway District offering these things, or is this more centered in Kenosha and Racine, the larger campuses?
Absolutely. We are district-wide, and I can tell you on any given day when my team is out working with companies, it could be in Kenosha, Racine, or Walworth. So it's very exciting to know that we have that capacity and we have those relationships that we can do that. a lot of the opportunities come to us through partners and through referrals for companies we have worked with over the years. But the unique thing that we have, I think because of our relationships with the economic development organizations, they help connect us with businesses. So it gives us the capacity to be district-wide. But it's not just our customized training that we offer district-wide. We also provide our entrepreneurial resources and have expanded our Fab Lab resources out in Elkhorn as well. So there's a lot that we can do that can open those opportunities and access to all the communities we serve.
Yeah, and actually, we just had a delegation here from Morocco last week. So not only within the district, across the state, across the globe, right?
Absolutely.
I think you have a team or had a team in Arizona this week, too, doing some training.
Yep.
So maybe just touch on kind of the network of colleges that are part of this whole effort and how we can leverage each other's resources.
Yeah, we are really connected to many colleges through the NC3 network, and that's the National Coalition of Training Advanced Technology Partners. Right now they're having Train the Trainer in Phoenix. Great place to have training in January, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And we have actually a couple members from our team out there providing some advanced manufacturing training to other educators, which is exciting. Through our partnerships with NC3 and other entities, we have great relationships with Morocco and universities over there. So another university from Casablanca was out here this week trying to find out more about how we have our infrastructure and how we've worked with other universities in Morocco, which is really exciting to share that story. It started out, we were working with them to help them develop entrepreneurship programs, and it's kind of expanded and blown up from there. So you never know what we're going to be working on or who's going to be coming through our doors, but it always keeps things exciting and interesting for sure.
I'm sure. Wow, that really is cool. So I'm sure that some of the most meaningful partnerships that you have would be through an organization like CABA or the Racine County Economic Development Corporation. What exactly does that relationship look like, and how important is what you do to organizations like that?
I can say it's a deep partnership, and the nice thing about it is we all get along really well. I would say, you know, we care about each other, and that makes it easy to work with each other. So if there's an opportunity for a company to locate in Racine or Kenosha, you know, whether it's CABA or RCDC, they will always include us to talk about how we can address the workforce training needs of the company before they even get here. So we are right at the table. They're looking, you know, for land opportunities. You know, where are they going to build? How are they going to train their employees? We are there at the table to help them identify those training plans and be part of that process. And if we didn't have those relationships with our economic development partners, I don't think it would be as seamless for our companies, and we wouldn't have the great results that we're having, you know, the last few years around here and beyond. So it really is those relationships and partnerships that are deep, and I believe that's unique to Gateway in our district, and we are very fortunate to have that.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Very unique, very special, kind of the one-stop concept where employers in the community at large, whether it's workforce development centers, have access to Gateway services. We have great partnerships with the GED initiatives in all of our communities to help lift people up. We have great re-employment services with the Department of Corrections. We have really unique partnerships in helping establish fundamental skill development for dislocated workers so that they can become re-engaged in the community. And all of that happens through partnerships with all of these entities. It's not just Gateway alone. We know what our track is, right? We're good at certain pieces, but boy, collaborating on all of the state and federal resources that are available, we need the help of CABA. We need the help of the workforce development centers to put that entire puzzle together for individuals.
Wow, that's all so exciting and all so necessary. So remind our listeners how they can connect with you in terms of wanting to have more information about what you have to offer them, or if somebody has a company, what is the best way for them to connect and get even more information about what the possibilities are?
Sure. I would direct them to our website, which is www.gtc.edu. We have a Business and Workforce Solutions tab that gives an overview of all of our resources and programs that we provide. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to give me a call. My direct line is 262-898-7410. I'd be happy to point them in the right direction and help them in any way I can.
Wow. Well, it's so exciting to hear about all the things that that you are involved in and what a difference it must make in the community and for Gateway, of course, as a whole. So, Kate Walker, Director of Operation Gateway Business and Workforce Solutions, it was great to have you with us on The Morning Show today, and thank you for all of your hard work, you and everyone on your team.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. And, of course, President Brian Albrecht, always great to talk with you about all the exciting things going on here at Gateway and We will see you in February.
Thank you, Greg.
And the time is 8:44. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. And here is part two of today's program out of the Morning Show archives. I urge you to take a look, if you possibly can, at a fascinating new book called Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain from the 19th Century to Modern Times by Lucy Lethbridge, in which we are taken into the heart of the experience of servants, butlers, maids, and all other variants, and the way in which they functioned within various kinds of British homes, and not only within the borders of Britain, but Lucy Lethbridge's fascinating book even takes us into places like the nation of India and other points of the British Empire to help us understand where some of these rich and sometimes even bewildering traditions sprung, and of course what led ultimately to the demise of this fascinating world. Lucy Lethbridge has written for the London Observer, the Sunday Telegraph, the Times Literary Supplement, among other British publications. Again, her book is Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain from the 19th Century to Modern Times. Lucy Lethbridge, we welcome you to the Morning Show.
Good morning.
It's an absolutely fascinating book. I've enjoyed it so much. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how challenging it is for a historian like yourself to unlock some of the secrets of the real life experiences of servants. I mean, given the station of life in which they lived and the obscurity in which most of them, in a sense, worked. How difficult did it make it, the challenge then, for you to bring their experiences to life for us?
Well, of course, I mean, history is generally written by upstairs rather than downstairs, because downstairs is too busy working to sit down and write letters and diaries and autobiographies. So it was difficult, and I wanted to get the real voices and personalities that had facilitated this, an American journalist called a golden dream, which is the sort of flourishing of the great country house in the 19th and early 20th century. So, well, the first thing I did was I advertised in various magazines and for people who'd been in service before the Second World War. I knew I had to do that quite quickly because, of course, they would be very old. And I got a huge response, and not only from people who had been in service, but people who had letters, diaries, trunks full of photographs from relations who'd been in service. And so gradually this material started to open up, and there was more than I had thought there would be, and of a huge and wide variety, and it was wonderful, actually, to be able to give voices for the first time to these people.
Right. You know, I think another thing important about your book is that it reminds us that although we might immediately think of the Downton Abbey scenario, of a huge country estate and a huge number of servants, that's what this experience encompasses. Your book also reminds us that all kinds of people had servants, including people who could barely afford to have servants. And so this sometimes occurred on a very modest scale, and also on a grand scale as well. So it's important for us not to generalize too much when we talk about this experience.
Oh, most definitely. And in fact, I think the Downton Abbey, as it were, as a sort of shorthand, is the most public face of that kind of huge servanted household. It represents about 2% of the experience of most servants. You were relatively lucky if you got into a country house like Downton Abbey because you were comfortable, well-fed, and you had a career ladder. And it's very important to look at, and I think, in fact, Downton Abbey does this quite well, that those large country houses did offer a career progression. You would go in at the bottom and work your way up to the top and to a senior managerial role, like a butler or a housekeeper. But in the vast majority, really the vast majority of servants, were single-handed girls working in slightly cash-strapped lower-middle-class houses where they had to do all the work, and it was very hard labor, and with very little time off, not very good food, And it's not to say you weren't always well-treated, were always badly treated. Sometimes you were well-treated, but nonetheless, it was a job that didn't offer much progression upward.
One of the most interesting observations you make is about how when it came to modern innovations to help make, for instance, housekeeping, house cleaning, the preparation of food easier and more convenient, that in many cases it was Britain and the upper classes of Britain who were most resistant to those technological breakthroughs, which would have made life so much easier for the servants. Give our listeners one or two examples of what I'm talking about.
Well, yes, I think it is interesting how resistant the upper classes became to new technology. They weren't at the very beginning, but I think from the mid-19th century onwards, there was a lot of social unrest about the Industrial Revolution. There was a lot of unease about a new urbanized laboring class. There were fears about revolution. There were fears about sort of social unrest. And having servants became a way of maintaining the status quo, maintaining this sort of paternalistic dependency. And so new technologies got in the way of that, you know, because if you have a washing machine, you might, you know, it gets in the way of the relationship between master and servant, which is very important to upholding that sort of unshifting status quo. And there were some fascinating little statistics I came up with that I had absolutely no idea about. I mean, I had no idea, for example, that in 1960, only 80% of houses in this country had electricity. I mean, that seemed to me absolutely astonishing in 1960.
For instance, then you have all kinds of servants where their only job is to maintain the gas lamps throughout a huge country home. I mean, you need to have people doing that if you are not willing to, for instance, shift to the convenience of electricity where you can just flip a light switch on and off. It's almost as though this society went out of its way to keep life in an antiquated sort of state in which you needed all these servants.
And in fact, technology then becomes associated with something rather suburban and middle class, you know, and there are lots of jokes about people having toasters. Toasters were always considered very sort of middle class. And it was just the possession of a toaster let everyone know that you weren't from the top drawer.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of very sort of complicated things around technologies. But of course, the other thing that one has to remember is that we went through, like as you did in the States, we went through an enormous economic depression between the wars, and people were reluctant to dismiss their servants because they knew they were throwing them out onto a situation that was mass unemployment. So people quite often kept these vast staffs out of kindness, you know. So maintained these absurd rituals and old-fashioned things, just, you know, simply to protect their own staff against unemployment.
You certainly explore some interesting things in the fourth chapter called Centralizing the Egg Yolks, in which you say this at one point: all sorts of desires become elevated to necessities when there is someone to do the hard labor of realizing them for you. And I suppose when that's true, when you have servants at your beck and call, ready to act upon your every whim, indeed a culture of what we might now regard as absurdity begins to spring up.
Well, I think that was one of the most fascinating things I found, actually. When I started my research, I hadn't even sort of thought about that aspect of things. But it did seem to me that, and I suppose we see this is the sort of excess we see in pop stars, don't we, when we learn about them, you know, wanting their hotel suites repainted and so on, that if there is someone to do work for you, then what would, then a sort of kind of private predilection suddenly becomes, something that you can't possibly live without. It's a sort of, it becomes a compulsion. So
and
you do get the story. Yes, go on.
That's fine. No, and on the other hand, One thing I really appreciate about your book is that although you spend a fair amount of time, and I'm glad you do, talking about such things, on the other hand, you are also very careful to acknowledge that in many cases we're talking about something that's quite admirable and even beautiful that will sometimes spring up between servants and masters or those that they serve, although sometimes it can be very hard to know exactly where that is. At one point, you said that the nature of the servant-master bond becomes harder to quantify the more intimate it becomes. That sometimes we're talking about mutual affection, you tell us even love between servant and those they serve. What is it that is so difficult to quantify or really make clear about the nature of these relationships?
Well, I think this is one of the great difficulties, and I think this is why the area of domestic service is largely left out of histories of labor, which tend to concentrate on factory workers and so on, because the relationships in the home, you share your home with someone over a number of years, that relationship is never, ever going to be exactly employer and employee, is it? It can't be. A sort of intimacy creeps in, which is will be slightly different in every home. And that's what I think made regulation, when legislation and regulation for domestic service has always been very difficult to impose, precisely because of that. It looks like a kind of state intervention into a familial relationship. But there were some very touching stories of I tended to find employers call them relationships of love. Employees don't tend to. Servants don't use the word love when they talk about their employers. But you know, there was one coachman, an old coachman, whose employer said to him, it was about 1910, as she was on her deathbed, she sent for him, and she said, take me in your arms, you know, her oldest friend, her oldest companion. And I don't know, it's very hard to draw conclusions about these things other than to say, you know, the variations of human experience are all there.
Right. And I think one of the most oddest things about all this is how, on the one hand, in many cases, especially with these large country estates, there would be a very careful sort of geographic separation between the so-called upstairs and downstairs. And yet, at the same time, there's this incredible intimacy and proximity. Servants were always there, always at beck and call, in the midst of the family's life, and yet not entirely there. I mean, that's one of the hardest things, I think, for us as outsiders looking in to understand.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? I think what's so fascinating is that the upstairs-downstairs idea of, as it were, the whole architecture of the house reflecting these two households, you know, you get backstairs, servants' entrances, basements, you know, back corridors, you know, green baize doors, all those separations, is essentially a completely Victorian invention. If you had been to an 18th century household, you would have found the servants sleeping in the same beds as their masters. There was a far more a sort of sprawling kind of mass of kind of dependents and underdependents, and no one wearing uniform, the separation was far less obvious. But it's the Victorians, and I think again it's part of this social unrest, this feeling of social unrest that I mentioned before, who initiate this sort of this absolute separation within the home, which I think gives rise to a resentment that never really quite goes away. This feeling of being having a sort of identity that is different, of not being permitted to have an identity that can ever change.
It's as though they drew comfort and encouragement and a sense of stability from that strict sense of hierarchy, and this just underscored it. It's one of many fascinating observations you make in your wonderful book, again called Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain from the 19th Century to Modern Times. Lucy Lethbridge, thank you so much for writing such a wonderful book.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, We'll be talking about one of the most interesting books I've read in a long time. It's called The Written World. It explores the emergence of written language and the way in which that really helped shape human history and helped bring about certain important world events. It's a really intriguing look, and we'll talk to its author, Martin Puckner, tomorrow. Thursday's program includes the monthly visit of Nan Calvert to the morning show, and on Friday, an examination of the credit score, how credit scores are calculated, and some important tips on how one can safeguard one's own credit score. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock, and the program